It's the 13th of March, 2017, and you're listening to Monday Morning Meetings on Migration, a conversation about migration and politics at the University of Amsterdam. I'm Darshan Vigneshwaran. Now, we've been away for the winter, but back on deck and trawling our way through the mess that is migration politics at the moment. And today, we're not going to talk about Donald Trump or his executive orders, but shift focus to developments in South Africa, where over the past few weeks, we have again seen a wide range of attacks on foreign nationals. Unfortunately, this is not a new story, but seemingly a repeating pattern that follows an all too familiar script. In former township areas and informal settlements, South African nationals gather together, take up arms, and either raid or loot foreign national shops, burn their homes, or evict them from those areas. Now, today we're really honoured to have Lauren Landau joining us on the show. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Lauren is the South African Research Chair in Mobility and the Politics of Difference at the African Centre for Migration and Society. Now, for those of you who don't know, ACMS has been really pushing the boundaries of migration research, not only in South Africa, but across the continent. And Lauren, along with his colleagues there, has been a big part of that. And I wanted to start off, Lauren, today, not talking about your car troubles, but asking you, what is the state of play at present in terms of these xenophobic attacks? And what is your interpretation of what's happening at the moment and why we're seeing these attacks now?
Right. Well, things are unfolding every day. I mean, there's marches, there were more attacks yesterday. But what we've been seeing over the last, let's say, 2 to 3 weeks, in some ways is, as you say, a familiar story of communities or members of those communities targeting foreigners. What I think is a bit different this time is that we are seeing a kind of more overtly political mobilization. An anti-foreigner march in downtown Pretoria, the capital of the country. We're seeing people coming out at various political levels and saying, well, we don't support the violence, but we hear you, we understand. This is a legitimate protest. We understand, rather than blame politicians, let's join you in blaming foreigners for the troubles. While the violence this time hasn't been as bad as it's been in the past, I think in some ways it's even more worrying because it's gone from a sort of fringe movement into the political mainstream.
Do you think that is due to specific political actors actively fomenting the violence? Are there organizers out there from any political party attempting to formulate these rallies and get people onto the streets?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we've seen in the past, going back to our research going into sort of 2006, 2007, is that these are not kind of spontaneous moves. And so what you don't see, at least not yet in South Africa, is the kind of, I mean, I know you didn't want to talk about Donald Trump, but, you know, we're not seeing that kind of hate mongering at the national level, what you've seen in the Netherlands recently, or in France, or certainly in the U.S., but it is local politicians, and in this case, it's community activists or people who claim to be community activists or business associations or others who are somehow putting people on the ground. Part of this is in response, it seems, to a statement made by the mayor of Johannesburg, a relatively new mayor who took office late last year, basically saying that we needed to clear the city out of foreign nationals because they were responsible for, of undocumented migrants, I guess. They're responsible for crime and they're responsible for violence. He didn't lead the protests, he condemned the violence, but those sorts of sentiments are there. But I think what we're really seeing here, as we did in 2008 when there was the big attacks before, was that there's a slight recalibration of national politics. There's a stronger opposition within the ANC, within the ruling party, and the opposition parties are gaining strength. And these protests are very much rooted in local communities trying to align themselves or get attention from an emergent political leadership. And I think part of the ferocity and the publicity around these attacks has been about trying to attract new leaders and attract national attention into very local problems.
Right. Now, I know, Lauren, you don't want to be known as a soothsayer or be associated with predicting violence. But so you wrote a book on this about, yeah, almost a decade ago now, or at least you started writing it almost a decade ago, called Exercising Demons, in which you talk about this relationship, right? You start to say that what political elites are doing is creating the space for this type of mobilization to take place and creating this sort of language for violence to be used as a way of attracting their attention. Do you think things have changed now? Are we seeing a more intense version of that, or is this something different?
I mean, you know, I don't know why you think I wouldn't want to be a soothsayer. It's so rare that we get to say that we're right about something. I wish in this case I weren't, but it, you know, there is a certain satisfaction. But I think we are seeing more of the same. We're seeing, but at a more institutionalized level. I think that in 2008, what that book is about is a sort of violence that, while it didn't catch some of us off guard, you know, it thrust itself into the national spotlight in a way that deeply shamed many South Africans and many political leaders who had at least felt that they'd been fighting for justice and a kind of social equality in the country. This time around, we're seeing some politicians very quick to condemn, but others at the local level, even at the national level, who are in overt denial that this is xenophobic, overt denial that this is a particular kind of problem beyond just petty crime, and sometimes implicitly endorsing the attacks by saying we need to hear the voices of people, we need to hear their frustrations, we need to hear the anger that they have against people who are in their community doing ill. So in some ways this is, it's gone beyond just opening space for it. I think there's a kind of logic of violence that has now become normalized, and that as the government struggles to maintain its legitimacy, as leaders struggle to win support of a population who had followed them for decades, this has become a convenient way in which to pass blame onto what are usually quite innocent victims.
Is that something that they do out of panic, or is that something that they do with a specific political strategy in mind? How conniving are these politicians who are creating this sort of space for this type of politics?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good question, because at the local level, it's very clearly a conscious effort of saying, this is a way that we can mobilize people. I mean, and sometimes in a very cynical way of saying, look, if I'm going to be a big man here, I need a protest. I need to burn some tires on the street. And that means I need a crowd. And to get that crowd, I'm going to have to pay them. And to pay them, I need resources. And I'm going to get those resources from looting foreign-owned shops. And overtly sort of mobilizing for that. At the national level, I mean, I think that there's a bit of ambiguity. The political leaders as a whole, but even individually, are often quite, I think, tormented as to how to approach this. Many of them are deeply xenophobic themselves. Many of them genuinely believe that the country has been overrun by foreigners, that the presence of these people, that they've taken over business from South Africans, that they're taking over every job from South Africans. Of course, as elsewhere, the evidence for that is either absent or contradicts that kind of position, but they believe that. Others, I think, are panicked. They are refusing. They don't want to come out against their population, their constituency. They know that their positions are highly vulnerable. They know that they can be pushed off a party list at the local, provincial, or even national level if they say something wrong. And I think this is a great way for them to resonate and connect with their people. It's something that they can share, which is, you know, it's a nice thing for them, not so nice if you're a foreigner.
Now, the things that you're saying within ACMS and its sort of network of scholars are nothing new. That you've been looking at the political origins of these types of acts for a long time now. I'm getting the sense that that's not quite the case amongst your colleagues elsewhere in the university, across South Africa, and also people who are studying this in from the perspective of the media or broader civil society actors. Could you let us know about what their take is on this violence and whether you have any disagreements with it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, South Africa is a fairly inward-looking place, increasingly so, both in politics and in academy. And the violence here tends to be seen as in either purely racial terms, which erases differences within the black population, or in very old-fashioned kind of structural Marxist terms, in which violence is seen as a kind of emerges agentless from mass discrimination. It is a natural, almost kind of biological or mechanical reaction to being underprivileged and politically marginalized. And while those sorts of things are obviously part of the story, you know, if you look at this closely, we see that many of these conflicts are rooted in forms of difference that are not part of the South African sort of master narrative. Within divisions within the black population, divisions within political parties, we're seeing a kind of underprivileged black population that is expressing agency in the sense that they are manipulating discourses of exclusion, of difference, for their own purposes. And those don't fit progressive narratives here. We don't like to blame the poor for hurting the poor. And I think they also kind of challenge the way in which we think about the racial cosmology of South Africa in ways that are uncomfortable, again, both to progressive kind of analysts and I think also to the government, which continues to rely on a very crude kind of understanding of divisions within the society.
So is making your sort of argument getting you into trouble?
Well, I mean, I wish it were, because that would imply someone were listening to what I was saying. I don't think, I think there's a point at which discussions of these issues are being largely silenced. They surface once in a while when there's violence on the street. But the discussions of social cohesion, the discussions of building communities or even fighting poverty, as soon as the violence stops or is out of the media spotlight, all of those discussions also stop.
Right. So I want to move sort of away from the South African perspective a little bit and talk about, why we're paying attention right now from Amsterdam to these sorts of attacks. And I mean, it's been quite interesting for me to move outside of the South African narrative and look at it now from the outside and see how, it's only rarely when we get these sorts of flurries of attacks that South Africa even appears on the international radar, both for the media and also for scholars. I'm wondering, what do you make of that? And how does that influence your ability to motivate for change, to study the problem, and to also, gain attention to what's happening there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it does speak a little bit about, European, American, Australia, we're all primarily concerned with those things that affect us most directly. And over the last year or two, migration from Africa to Europe has certainly, people are talking about it a bit more than they used to. And the European Union is investing billions of euros into Africa to stop movements. So I think, that there is an interest in African migration, but there's not an interest in Southern African migration. Very much this is, Europe is concerned with the people crossing the Mediterranean, not with the people coming this way, which in some ways is revealing of the ways in which problematics are defined within the academy. South Africa is one of the largest sort of destinations for asylum seekers on the continent and certainly for other forms of international migration. But it's not, it's in some ways it's not crisis driven. It's not, people crossing Niger, it's not Sudan, it's not the massive camps in Kenya. So I think, people are not paying that much attention or not that interested. Ironically, I think the concern with migrants coming across the Sahel or across the Mediterranean is reawakening people in Europe to South Africa as a potential alternative. And the European Union and others are increasingly now interested in building a sort of nice space for migrants to go out of the somewhat misguided hope that they'll turn left instead of right when they leave Sudan or Eritrea.
I mean, yeah, I agree with that narrative, right? That, it's because this migration doesn't affect Europeans that they don't really need to care that much. But at the same time, they're really intent at looking across the pond and trying to, Muhammad Ali's son gets pulled up at JFK and that's all up in my Twitter feed, right? Similar sorts of events happen in South Africa and it doesn't register a blip. Now, like, there's some obvious explanations for that, but there's also sort of, you know, a hypocrisy of care as well, I think.
Well, there is, but there's also just very few of us. I mean, I think if you, you know, I think increasingly in the US or Europe, there are people within the academy studying questions of migration, social justice, related to race, related to religion. Clearly outside of the academy, we've, in the last, even the last 3 or 4 months, seen an activation of what was a sort of latent, you know, sleeper, liberal or lefty sleeper cells that have now been activated. I think in across much of Africa, you can find whole countries without an organization dedicated to questions of migrant rights or refugee rights. In South Africa, there's just a few, and despite the numbers here, despite, you know, the mass sort of arrests and deportation and harassment of foreigners, no one is posting these things. You know, you rarely see it except when it's like that. And if we here don't care about it, I think it's, you know, it's not surprising that people in other parts of the world also don't care that much.
So on that depressing note, Lauren, I'm going to say thank you for appearing on Monday Morning Meetings on Migration. And we hope to have you back on the show.
It'd be great. And thank you for turning your attention southward.
Will do. 4M can be accessed at 4mpodcast.com through iTunes and now also through Stitcher. And you can sign up for updates through our Twitter and Facebook accounts. If you have a suggestion about a story you'd like us to feature or would like to post an audio rejoinder to something that's been said on a previous podcast, please send us an email at imes@uva.nl.